You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 372. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast, John. I'm on the best of the drugs right now.
Oh, you're on crystal meth.
Better. I am on really what is like the premier drug. I imagine that would suit you well if you were in the club, John, in the club, or
you're an ecstasy ad,
or God, if you're out. Just walking the streets trying to be real.
Whippets? Probably... Are you doing whippets?
Ooh, I wish, John. I wish this was whippets. But no, this is better than whippets. In terms Ricky would understand, this is the dankest of the drugs.
Okay. You're speaking my language.
Yeah, so I thought so. So I am right now, John, all fucking messed up on the generic Walmart brand Neocitrin.
Is that Theraflu?
I don't know what that is, but it's like a tea, or it's just like a white powder that you put in a cup and put water in there, and it is supposed to help you with the cold. It's basically just like powdered acetaminophen, it tastes horrible. But it's the drowsy version, John. So if halfway through this show I just disappear, vanish on you, it's because I have fallen into a peaceful slumber that is supposed to cure my cold.
I feel like we should have Wilford Brimley, like just give a disclaimer now, because I feel like this is a drug commercial, like a over-the-counter drug commercial. If you want lasting relief, then I always rely on acetaminophen in tea and crystal meth.
This I don't know if this stuff really works. Like two nights ago, I had some, and I mean, I was also on various cold medicines throughout the day, and I drank like 600 coffees, but for some reason I could not sleep. Like there was no drowsy. I was just like lying there in bed wired for hours, which was not good. Last night was a little better. So maybe I'm acclimating to it. Maybe it'll start to work for me, and it'll be sleepy time in the middle of this podcast. So anyways, this is the Punk News Podcast. If you've never listened, it is a podcast in which we talk about shit that happened the last week on punk rock. Before we get going, John, Ricky, I guess I kind of blew over your introductions. Mr. John Gentile is joining me, features editor. Hi, John.
Hi, Adam.
We've already introduced ourselves to each other. Also, Mr. Ricky Frankel on the best coast out there. How you doing?
I'm good. Glad to be back. I think it's been a couple episodes now, hasn't it?
Yeah, because you bailed, and we had to emergency parachute Sean in.
Well, you guys got a good talk about Riot Fest from him, though. That was cool. I'm glad he did that.
I mean, he's young, so he is uncommitted and has nothing to do. So it's probably better that we give him something to do that's constructive, because you know if you're all full of hormones and piss, and then you try to you just leave him sit there, they'll just start committing crimes, right? So, like, the youth.
So you're saying we're keeping staffers strong on the straight and narrow. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, like, look, if we didn't have him on that podcast, what was he going to be doing, right? Because, like, what is
he? Smoking crystal meth. That's what he would be doing.
Crystal meth. I mean, robbing convenience stores. I mean, like, you give kids, like the slightest bit of boredom, and it's just pandemonium. So yeah, so we're helping Sean.
Adam White, to be 18 again, senior year of high school. Nothing to do on the weekends. Your weekdays are pretty chill because you're a senior. All you got to do is apply to college, go out and have fun. To be 18, or even to be in college again. Oh, the life.
I would take college over 18.
Oh, me too.
Back to me being 18, it would have just been like eating horrible things at like 3 a.m. with no consequence at all. And there's something about that appeals to me. I remember we were sitting around, we were on God, what we were on, we used ICQ, but you guys probably had like AOL Instant Messenger or whatever. You know, talking to our friends, everyone's in their respective like weird little teenage basement caves, and then someone at like 2:30 in the morning is like, "You want to go to Burger King?" And it's like, okay. And then, you know, you sneak out the back door of your house and get in your buddy's K car and you go to Burger King.
I don't know, man. When I was 18, it was
if I did that right now, John, I would die.
When I was 18, it was pretty chill, man. I wore a leather jacket. I used to go to this diner all the time. And this kid I used to mentor, he would get in trouble, so I would get him out of the trouble. And the jukebox didn't really work, but if I kicked it, it would work. Oh, wait, that was Happy Days. That wasn't me.
when I was eight,
no one saw that.
See, I was 18 in 2010. So
fuck off.
So we didn't have AIM. I was at the, I didn't use AIM. I used iChat. And no, senior year was, high school in general was awful, but senior year was not particularly fun. I had way more fun in college.
How about this? To have the brains we have now, but to be 18. How about that?
Oh, that, and also to be in Sean's place and like starting college soon and young adulthood, that I can get behind.
Man, if only I had two lives, I could really, really make the second one go real well.
I don't know. I think that like being young right now, like I know how horribly phone addicted I am, but like I'm an old broken person and no one cares about me. I feel like being young, it would just be infuriating. Like, I was okay being in college in like, you know, like 2001, 2002, because like I wasn't glued to a smartphone the whole time.
In a way, so I could be
there.
In a way, I kind of envy that because I didn't. I kind of wish I didn't have the phone back then, in college. It sounds a little bit more freeing, to be honest.
Anyway, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Let's reach into the mailbag. Just a couple of quick mailbags, letters today. This is from Terry. Here's what Terry has to say. On the last podcast, John said that bullet belts do not hold up your pants. This is incorrect. I have had several bullet belts during my lifetime, and I have had one pair that did not hold up my pants, but I had another pair that is two parts. You lace the belt around your pants and then clip the bullet belt onto the underlying belt. Therefore, the bullet belt does indeed hold up your pants. And that's from Terry.
I gotta say,
No, it doesn't. The underlying belt holds up your pants. The bullet belt is just like an ornament that you hung on.
I gotta say, I was laughing so hard at this debate on this episode that you guys were talking about. I couldn't believe that it actually sparked genuine arguments. At all.
This is what happens when you're not here.
So what is going on?
And then here's another thing that we'll be talking about this guy. Here we go. We'll be talking about this guy briefly. This guy, this is some anonymous guy, skin complaint, whoever that is. He said, wasn't it Morrissey that thought the Ramones were shit? And then I said, yes, but he has since retracted his view, making the cover of the Ramones, we'll talk about that later, somewhat poignant. He also curated a Ramones compilation for Record Store Day. And then Skin Complaint's reply was this: he's still a dick.
Woo!
And so you can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. We love getting your mail.
We do. So, John, before we get the show started here, you scrawled something in our notes that you are mad.
Again. I am mad. I'm annoyed. Yep. Here's the deal, man. I feel as though Punk News is pretty cool towards PR people. Actually, Punk News is really cool towards PR people. I'll say it again, kids, and you don't need a PR person to do this. If you want Punk News to premiere one of your band's tunes, it only has to be a new song, and email me at johng@punknews.org, and we will premiere it. And PR people pitch me all day, every day, and I always say yes. If you notice, Punk News has had way more premieres the past 2 years than we did ever before. We usually have like at least one a day, sometimes two, three, or even we had four in one day a little while ago. We'll premiere anything. We don't care. We're cool. When people ask us to review stuff, we genuinely pitch our reviews to all the writers and say, does anyone want to review this? We don't say no to – I don't think I've ever said no to a review or a premiere ever. A couple of times I had the only time I've ever said no to a premiere is like the song's been out for like 5 months and the person was lying. Or sometimes people send me like really weird stuff. Like this one guy's like, here's a song about how much I hate OJ Simpson. And it like, that sounds kind of funny, I guess, but it went into uneasy territories, if you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying? Okay. So I'm like, well, we're not going to premiere that. You know, you know what I mean? So we're super cool. We're polite. There's other writers and other editors. I'm not going to name them that like kind of make fun of PR people. And listen, PR is a tough job. It's a tough job. You got to get people to cover music. There's way more music than there is, I guess, energy to cover it. So you get way more no's than you do yeses. You know what I mean? And so it's definitely a tough job. And so some of these writers, they like make fun of PR people and say, oh, this is a stupid pitch. We're not about that. We never do that. I realize it's a tough gig. And that's fine. But I hate it. I absolutely hate it when PR people play games. And this week I had no less than 4 PR people play games. And I don't know if it's just a coincidence or if it's an emerging trend. At the point, it might be an emerging trend because more and more websites are becoming less, I guess, news outlets or even editorial outlets. And they're more just PR things. Basically, you know, 5-10 years ago, the websites, newspapers, magazines had all the power, all the power. You read about it in the 70s and 80s, you know, writers would be getting bribed with money and drugs and women and anything to cover bands. So they had all the power. But now that Facebook exists, now that Twitter exists, now that SoundCloud exists, and because there's so many online publications, we do have less power than we used to have. And I'm not trying to power trip. The effect of that is a lot of PR people have gotten more brazen, which I don't necessarily mind, but I hate games. I don't like playing games. This week I had 2 PR people that I've done lots of stuff for pitch me something. I said, give it to me. And after like a couple of hours, they said it to me. And then they're like, oh, we actually are running it somewhere else. I hate that. I hate that. The rule used to be if you're pitching something to someone, then you're only pitching it to them. You're not pitching to other people. But maybe like within the past month, that rule has changed. Or maybe people are just playing games. Because what it says to me is, oh, well, you're not important enough for us. You're kind of our backup. And listen, nobody wants to be the second person asked to the prom. Everybody wants to be the first. You know what I'm saying? So I hate that. But that's not even what bugged me the most. And what disappointed me is with those two, it's people I've done a lot of stuff with. And now they're playing games that kind of shady PR people play, you know? And I don't know if that's a trend or whatnot. And so I'm thinking, well, what should my punishment be? Because you can't be a rug. So my punishment is I've known these people for a couple, at least 3 or 4 years now. So I'm not going to blackball them, but I just ignore their subsequent follow-up emails. Like they were like, oh, but you want to premiere this instead. I just ignored it. Let's pause right now. Adam White, is that appropriate punishment? Am I being too much of a hard ass? What do you think?
What I've figured out is that like the PR thing for it to be effective is you got to build an ongoing relationship with this person. And I've been on the full ignore end of it for a few years now that I'm just kind of coming out of, where there was a period there after around when my first kid was born where I'm like, I don't have time to do anything with punk news, let alone like field all this PR stuff. So I basically went dark on it. And I found that like it was just still an ongoing barrage of press release emails. And what a lot of them started to look like to me, and this probably isn't a wrong assumption, is, you know, they're form letters. And I know I'm on someone's list. Someone bought a list of, you know, music journos or anything. And, you know, they mail merge their shit in and it goes out to everyone's. And I get, you know, emails from people I've never heard before that are like, hey, Adam. And then they, you know, try to sell me whatever they're trying to sell me. And that seemed like the game. And I was okay ignoring a lot of that. And I never felt bad about it. But I mean, recently, I feel like there's a few PR people that I've kind of got to know and that have actually like sat down and talked to me about like what the goals are of what we're trying to do and are, you know, running their firms like people. And those ones, I'm way more receptive to actually like go and respond to them because I don't know, they seem to have given a little bit more of a shit. And even if that's part of their game, John, even if that's just, you know, they've decided that what they're going to do is they're going to Dale Carnegie me and, you know, talk to me and have a nice conversation and that will butter me up for when they need me. I'm okay with that kind of because, you know, I get that they have a job to do and it makes the interaction with them less pleasant. But yeah, I mean, anyone that I haven't gone and established that kind of back and forth relationship with lately, it still just all seems like form letters, and I ignore so much of it.
But my question is, so these two PR people I've had a 2 or 3 year relationship with, I thought they were super cool, and I still think they are pretty cool, but they both pitched me something. I said yes almost right away, and then they bird dogged me and gave it to somebody else. And so then they sent follow up emails like, oh, well, do you want to do this? So my punishment was I just ignored that because I don't want them to feel as though they're doing me a favor. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm doing them the favor, giving them the space and donating my time. You see, is that an appropriate punishment? Should I have been harsher? Was I too harsh?
I guess if you ignore them, do they know that you're ignoring them? Would it have better have just been to say like, hey, I'm kind of bummed out by this past interaction that we've had?
But if I say that, then they'll just come up with some excuse like, oh, this never happens. Well, so that gives them an out. And I know they shouldn't have an out, you see.
I mean, that's okay. But at least they know that you were annoyed by it. So if they care about what you're, you know, that ongoing relationship, then they would not pull that shit on you anymore. But I don't know, John. I don't know if people get the silence thing as a message.
I'm pretty responsive, and they send follow ups. You know what I mean? So I don't know.
Well, you know,
but that's not. Oh God!
Sorry. You. There's just one thing that I think just to add on here. I think, you know, in over email, it's kind of hard to get the tone of what someone's saying. So I don't. So whether it's being written down or you're ignoring them. Ignoring can also mean, oh, he's not getting his email right now. He's just not, he doesn't have time because this is a volunteer job. So there's more than one way things can be interpreted over email.
PR people never think that way because they email you constantly. They never think that way.
Do you want to know what they should? This isn't answering your question, but I kind of want to bring it up because every time it happened, I didn't know what to do. there was a while where everyone's favorite Chicago-based music label Victory Records had a PR person that decided that they were going to do things differently, John. They were not going to just incessantly email you and have you ignore their emails. No, they were going to phone me, right? And it was weird because like Punk News isn't a business. We don't have a phone number. Like you can't talk to the receptionist. So A, like how did you get my phone number? That's sort of terrifying. And B, Punk News isn't a business. So it's like, I don't want to talk to you all of a sudden on demand. And C, we don't have the kind of relationship where you could do that. So if all of a sudden my phone rings and I look at it and it's like Victory Records, I'm like, what the fuck? Like I answer it the first time because I'm like, oh shit, did we like piss someone off so much that like, you know, we've posted the worst piece of libel ever. And you know, it's going to be take down this article or we're sending in the dogs. Like, is that what's going to happen? And I like, you know, and I give it this like uneasy kind of like, hello. And it's like, oh, hey, have you heard about the new Catch-22 thing? And I'm like, what?
Oh, I would
like,
be so pissed if that happened to me.
What the fuck? Like, it was, and then I ignored it all every subsequent time it came through because I don't know. Maybe that happens. Like if you're Rolling Stone or AP, like, does that happen?
Well, I had a New Jersey PR, pretty big PR firm, like phone call me all the time. And I kept, like, they kept calling from different numbers. So I kept forgetting that it was them and I would pick it up. And they were so aggressive, not mean aggressive. They're like, well, would you cover? And I would always say yes, because they would go on and on. But then I just like wouldn't do it because I didn't want to do it to begin with, you know? So basically, like I didn't mean to, but I wanted just to get them off the phone. So I would say, oh yeah, we'll do something. We'll do something after like a 10 minute phone conversation, and then I just wouldn't do it, and they would keep following up. It's like I mean, from the PR,
well, they're following up because you said you'd do
it. Well, I'm trying to get them off the phone. I'm just trying to get them out of my life, you know. Anyways, here's why I'm really mad. The other thing is just annoying, but you know, I can let that one go. These two I'm annoyed about. One is I got one PR person that's playing games, that's emailing me, and then I'm saying, okay, we'll do X, Y, and Z, but then that person is emailing other people saying, oh, can you do X, Y, Z? I already said that we'll do X, Y, and Z, or we'll do X and Y. Why are you emailing someone else saying, oh, can you do X, Y, and Z? I hate when they play games between people in the organization. I'm totally on the level when it comes to PR people, so I hate it when PR people are playing games like that. And I understand it's a tough job, and I understand it's their job to get what their client wants. That being said, we do have a relationship, and so if I can't take you at your word, then we got a problem. You know what I mean? And here's what I'm really mad about. This one really freaking pissed me off. Let me pull this one up real quick. So we had an older picture of a band, and I don't even know why I'm airing this dirty laundry. I'm just annoyed by it. So I'm just going to talk about
Get the poison out, John. Get the poison out.
Is that a Howard Stern reference, Ricky?
I don't think so.
Okay, because in Howard Stern, that has an entirely different meaning. Anyways.
No.
So we had a picture of a band, and it's an older picture of the band up there. And so I got an email from the person, and it wasn't even – here's the headline. Update that blank band photo. That's the subject. Update that blank – not please would you or not can you. A command to me. And it says, John, I think I've emailed like multiple times on this. I'm sure you don't mean ill will, but every time you post any blank band news, you're using an old picture. Please switch it with one of these. And this really pissed me off because this person has not emailed me before. So she's trying to put me on the defensive she's already reached out to me multiple times and I've ignored her, which is not the case, which really pissed me off. And then she said, I'm sure you don't mean any ill will, but by saying I'm sure you don't meaning ill will is implying that I do have ill will, which I don't. You see what I'm saying? And it just blew my mind. I guess in part because I'm used to PR people, you know, saying, oh, please would you, which, listen, I'm not power tripping. I don't need people to grovel, but she's like talking to me like she's my boss, you know, or that I have to do this. You know, I don't have to do anything, PR person. And the point being is this is the first time I've had a PR, not the first time, but this is a rare instance of I had a PR person be kind of outwardly antagonistic. And not only that, be directly deceptive in their email and be passive aggressive. The point being is I hate passive aggressiveness. I hate tricks. And that's what this person is trying to do. And it really pissed me off.
John, I think you need to take a page from the Millennial Rulebook here and get yourself a series of sarcastic GIF memes, and you can use them for all of your various grievances. So, like, some PR person, you know, they want to give you a premiere, and then they turn around and they give it to the other guy. Well, you turn around and you email them some fucking, I don't know, some Rick and Morty thing, right? And then, you know, someone... So someone does this where they want you to take the picture down and they're being really aggressive of it. Well, you turn around and you shoot them some like BoJack Horseman thing, right? I don't know. Some shit the kids
are
like.
Memes,
right?
Are the future.
You go and you make. Yeah. So Ricky can set them up for you. Ricky can hook you up with the dankest.
Yeah,
of
I can.
Memes,
I can.
Right?
And then, I can, you know, dig through my filthy Frank comments and 4chan. And if you want to get dark, we can go to 4chan or whatever. I don't know.
I don't know what this PR person is hoping to get. Like, what are they hoping to get from me by saying I'm a bad person and trying to annoy me? Like, what's
they wanted your attention, John?
Well, they got it. And my attention now that I hate them. You know, I don't hate them. I dislike them. So, in the long run, does that get you what you want? The answer is no. So, I don't know what the deal is, man. Maybe I'm becoming ultra sensitive, but I don't know, man. Maybe just a bad week. Maybe it was the PR community.
You know what it is?
This week, and
you feel you feel disrespected.
I do feel disrespected.
I think that's more. Like, I think that's where we're at.
Who are you to say that I ignored your emails when I haven't? And who are you to say that I don't mean ill will, implying that I do? Like what the hell? You know? Yeah. Anyways, that pissed me off, man. Pissed me off. So anyways, JJG keeps grudges, and the JJG's got a long memory. That's what I'm saying.
Do you want this song spot so you can play something that adequately illustrates your rage?
Yeah, I do. Let me think. Let me think of what I'm going to play. Let me think. I'm going to play something mean. Something mean. How about? Oh, I know. Let's see. Let me think. Let me think. Somebody vamp while I think of something really mean and vicious to play.
What was this? If you want me to just fill time, what was this intervention that needed to be done on me?
I'm trying to think what it was.
Something about me being too angry now. Even though we had mail saying I wasn't angry enough, like during the summer.
Oh yeah, well though, yeah, this like the people were saying that, like, you know, Ricky's too milquetoast. He's not you
know, there's that part.
He's not getting angry.
And then I got angry.
And then you started getting angry. But then we all kind of got scared.
Because I think I've been angry.
Here we go. Here's my song.
I don't know.
Here's my song. It's by the Dwarves. It's called "Fuck You Up and Get High." That's what this song's all about. Let's go. We'll be right back.
Well, I'm both fucked up and high on this neosipin. So let's jump into this thing here and talk about some of the news that happened this week. So first of all, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Ohio there, they've announced the long list of nominations for their 2018 induction year. So the nominated groups this year include, and I guess we should clarify this, like if you're nominated, you don't get in. There's still, you know, you
two more rounds.
Yeah, there's all sorts of machinations that have to go there. Now, what was the rule here? It has to be 25 years since the artist's first release.
Correct. I believe it's first album, not first release.
First album. Okay, so the nominated groups this year, and this is always a mix of people who have suddenly become eligible and are names, and people who just keep getting overlooked year on year. So anyways, it's a pretty random list. So we have Bon Jovi, Kate Bush, The Cars, Depeche Mode, Dire Straits, Eurythmics, The J. Geils Band, Judas Priest, LL Cool J, MC5, The Meters.
I'm
missing a no. Oh, all right. Moody Blues. I don't actually know who the Meters are, to tell you the truth.
Oh, the Meters, the Meters are an old soul and R&B group.
Oh, I read that, and like in the copy I'm reading, that's the end of the sentence, so there's a hyphen, so I wanted to say Meteors, but there was no O. The Moody Blues, Radiohead, Rage Against the Machine, Rufus featuring Chaka Khan, Nina Simone, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, Link Ray, and the Zombies. There were groups that were nominated last year, but were not included in this year's ballot. And that includes Kraftwerk, Bad Brains, Jane's Addiction, Nine Inch Nails, The Smiths, and Janet Jackson. So those guys are all in limbo. So the actual inductees are going to be announced in December. John, we talk about this every year when it comes up because, I don't know, it's interesting to try to parse what the fuck is going on. So what the fuck is going on?
I don't know what's going on this year, because last year it seemed as if the Rock Hall of Fame was like reaching for some, I guess, not authenticity, but some dignity, if you will. So, you know, Bad Brains, Kraftwerk. I almost said Kraftwerk. Kraftwerk. The Smiths, James.
That's the duck cover band of Kraftwerk.
The Smiths. These are all, you know, kind of college rock, indie rock bands that people say, oh, these are good bands that are deep art. But this year, they kind of just threw it out the window. You know, Eurythmics, Dire Straits, I like the J. Geils Band, but, you know, J. Geils Band is not deep. You know, Bon Jovi, all these kind of like cheesy 80s bands.
No,
like,
oh, come on.
Well, you like J. Geils Band?
No. You continue. I got something to say. I'll wait.
Well, you're talking about Rage Against the Machine and
no.
I mean, MC5. Oh, well, anyways.
I'll when you're done.
It's cool that they nominated LL Cool J. It's cool they nominated Judas Priest. What is also interesting is now they're nominating what I would call modern bands, if you will. That is bands, you know, starting in, you know, in 1990, if you will, or so. Radiohead and Rage Against the Machine. And it's interesting to see those bands stacked up against like the Moody Blues or something. That being said, it's also nice to see that they mentioned some foundational groups. Nina Simone, of course, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, You Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog, one of the most famous songs in rock and roll ever. And Link Ray and the Zombies, also important groups. What's interesting about this, though, is it doesn't even seem clear as who the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame wants to be. Do they want to be the popular Rock and Roll Hall of, you know, here's popular music? Do they want to be what they consider the deep art group? Or is it, but it really, it just seems to be kind of a random mishmash. And I guess that's because it's decided on voting, though I suspect that the voting isn't strict voting. I think there's a little push and pull behind the scenes, but who knows? That being said, is a lot of these bands just cheesy 80s groups. And also, though, a lot of these groups, like, there's very few groups here that will get them a whole lot of attention. Like, if Bad Brains got in, that's a lot of attention from the punks. If Smith gets in, that's a lot of attention from the indie rock group. If Janet Jackson got in, that's a lot of attention from pop. But here, I mean, you know, does anybody really care about Dire Straits, the Eurythmics, J. Geils Band? I mean, I like all those bands. They all have fans. But those fans aren't going to freak out because they're getting in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Even Bon Jovi fans, or even Kate Bush fans, or even the Cars fans. The only thing here that would generate like a lot of notice, if you will, is maybe Judas Priest, maybe LL Cool J, not MC5, just Radiohead and Rage Against the Machine. And that's kind of the only thing that's going to generate notice here. So I guess I'm surprised by the directionless and seemingly randomness and what's the word I'm looking for? No aforethought of this list here. It just seemed to be kind of a random grab bag without any planning whatsoever. That being said, I like to do my seven guesses every year. Here's who I think is going to get in. I'm always way off. I think Rage will get in, and I think Rage will accept the award even though they shouldn't. I think Radiohead will get in. I think Judas Priest will get in, and that will be cool. I think Bon Jovi will, even though he shouldn't. I think the Cars will, just because they've been, you know, bridesmaids but never the bride for so long. I think Rosetta Tharpe. No, I think Nina Simone will. And I think I'll say Link Ray. That's the seven I'm saying. So Link Ray, Nina Simone, Rage Against the Machine, Radiohead, Judas Priest, the Cars, and Bon Jovi.
Okay, no, I just want to have a question. So the bands that were nominated last year still have a chance to get in this year?
No.
They've got to be nominated. So yeah. they're just on the shelf until someone bothers to nominate them.
Okay.
Chic was famously on the shelf for like 9 years.
Okay, because I was going to ask about the Smiths, but never mind then. Okay, so I happen to agree, John. I think Bon Jovi will probably get in. He was massive in the 80s. The Cars probably. Dire Straits are more than just an 80s band. I think their first big hit was in the 70s with Sultan's a Swing, and Mark Knopfler was like, he is such an underrated guitarist that goes so unnoticed. He's
sorry, I fell asleep just thinking about Sultan's a Swing. I'm so sorry.
So good. And their hit Money for Nothing, I mean, that is a staple 80s song too. So I hope they get in. I've always really liked their stuff even before I was into punk rock. Judas Priest, I agree, would get in. To me, it's insane that the MC5 are not in yet, because
they should be in.
They are so influential, especially for the stuff that we listen to. Now, Rage Against the Machine's an interesting one because, yes, I do like their music. I have for a long time, but you know, their first album came out in 1992. They're exactly 25 years old, and I wonder if they do get in. This will be more not necessarily for the music, but more just as a political statement, just because that's what award shows are doing now. So
when you say political, you mean political in the Democrat versus Republican sense, or political in the sense is this is how we want to position our brand?
I don't see why both. Why not both? So I would not be surprised. I mean, again, I agree. They should. I agree with you, John, that they ostensibly shouldn't take it because like that's not, this shouldn't be their thing. This is something they probably would hate. But again, I don't care too much about this. I've always kind of advocated for it not being the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but really just the Music Hall of Fame. Like LL Cool J is not really like rock and roll, in the more traditional sense. So, what will be interesting is, if the Smiths, I was just curious about this. If the Smiths actually get, let's say they get it for whatever reason in a year or two, do you think, how would they even accept the award? Would they, don't they hate each other?
Good question. The answer is they probably don't hate each other as much as they used to.
Yeah.
I don't think they would do a Smith reunion, especially for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And Morrissey would probably say, oh, I hate it because they served meat or whatever.
Yeah.
However, Morrissey and Johnny Marr, they're not like best of the word in the street is, according to both Johnny Marr's autobiography and Morrissey's autobiography, is they don't like hate each other.
Yeah.
But they're not friends. They met a few times over the past couple of years just to like kind of discuss business.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't hate each other to the extent where they can't work together on reissues and that kind of a thing.
Got
if that
it.
Makes any sense.
No, that totally makes sense. And then I was going to follow up on like, do you think that would spark a reunion? But if you don't think
not,
so,
I'm not,
I'm just not in the loop as much as you are. So I was just genuinely curious.
I feel like I have a solution for the weird ambiguity of where these lists come from. And I think it's fully reasonable for them to acknowledge that they have the dual competing goals of both accurately representing what's worthy of commemoration for music history, and also keeping like modern human beings interested in the process. So all they need to do is like break those nominations into some decade categories or something like that, and explicitly say, you know what, we're going to bring in X people from the 50s, X people from the 60s, X people from the 70s, and those could be larger numbers or whatever. And then X from the 80s and X from whatever the nomination period goes to. And there's music prizes that do this. There's one up here that's related to Polaris called the Slate Family Heritage Prize that nominates. It's like a fan voted thing that awards a little prize to like old Canadian records. And there's, if you went to vote on it right now and you can, there, the categories are like 1960 to 1975, right? So in that category, you're choosing between, like, you know, I'm looking at it right now. You know, you've got records from Neil Young, and you have records from The Band, Gordon Lightfoot, Joni Mitchell, like all in that thing. And then you go, the next one is like 1976 to 1985. So you've got, you know, you've got DOA records in there and other stuff. And then there's a, you know, 86 to 95, and then 96 to 05. And of course, there's way more albums that I'm intimately familiar with in the 96 to 05 category on this, but I get to vote for like one out of each of the categories, and it allows me to like both do the history thing and, you know, try to bump that Constantine's record. So I don't see why they can't do something similar, because it's okay that they want, you know, Radiohead fans to make the trip to Cleveland to go see the exhibit that they're going to build about them. That's fine. It's just, why are you making people choose between like Link Ray and Rage Against the Machine? Because if, you know, you should go vote for Link Ray first. Rage can get in there in fucking 30 years if you're going to give me that kind of choice, right?
I feel like it's kind of early for Rage to be nominated to begin with, to be honest. It just makes the cut.
All those modern bands feel early to me. I sort of want to say that, like, I mean, like, Rage's career is over and all that, but kind of. I think your career should either be like really, really clearly defined to the point where there's not much you're going to do these days that are going to screw it up, or I'll come back to that, right? Or there's got to be some air between when you stopped being a relevant cultural force and now. Because, like, let's say Rage gets in and you're going to go put together the Rage Against the Machine exhibit, right? Well, if you're going to go write the comprehensive history of that band, like, you can't right now, because, you know, despite the fact that I don't think they're interesting, like, Prophets of Rage is part of that narrative, right?
Yeah.
And it's an ongoing part of that narrative. You know, for you to go stick Radiohead in there, to me, like, you're sort of like assuming that, okay, Radiohead is thus done. Like, they're not going to release shit that is going to continue their story anymore.
Or ruin it.
But that's not... Right, or ruin it. That's what I was getting at too, right? What if one of these fucking people pulls like a Bill Cosby or something and does, right? And there's some horrible shit that comes out. Now, I know John's going to jump in and say like, oh, what about like this or that 50s rocker that was fucking their cousin, right? Yeah. Like,
you mean Jerry Lee Lewis? He was like the first guy to admit it was Jerry Lee Lewis.
But again,
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame loves that. I think that's great.
There's enough space between the crimes of Jerry Lee Lewis and the cultural impact of it having its resonance that the crimes just become part of that narrative. Right. But, you know, any of these people that are still, you know, artists with careers, I wouldn't want to bring them in for that reason, but also because, you know, if I was like someone in Radiohead, I don't necessarily want to be like put under glass right now. That's, I don't know. That's
why I think the MC and also the, again, MC5 deserve to be in there. For sure.
Yeah, like MC5 is a great example of someone that should be in there, right? Like, I don't know. Is there anyone going around right now playing music as the MC5?
You know, I saw Wayne Kramer do an acoustic set at Side One Dummy headquarters, and it was amazing, but he wasn't doing
like, yeah, that stuff. They're not. But
I think he's yeah, only. The, so, I think he's the so only surviving it, member too.
So all right. So it's not a going concern. But even if there was some MC5 reunion circuit band that was going around right now, the point in history when, you know, when MC5 like had their moments that went on to influence everyone else, when those singles and those records came out, there's quite a bit of time between that and now. Like that legacy is written and done. There's not anything that any of those guys are going to do at this point that would ever say like significantly change their Wikipedia page from the way it is at the moment.
That's what they said about Cosby.
Yeah, that's fucking what they said about Cosby. But you know what I mean, right? Like, you gotta have some space. Like, I don't know. Introducing all these acts where the people are still out there doing their thing.
Well, it underscored the fun. I used to think the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was cool when I was younger, and I still think the exhibits are cool, like the stuff. But the idea that a private company has the ability to canonize certain bands and it's not even clear what their directive is, it just underscores how ultimately pointless this kind of is, you know. And if it was voted on by the American public, it'd be like Toby Keith, you know. But I mean, the point being that it just goes to underscore that, like, it really is about the money. And I hate being it's only about the money, man, but it kind of is. I guess it's an imperfect solution to recording the important history of rock and roll. I guess the history of rock and roll could be recorded in a better way. This is an imperfect way without a clear directive. So, there's no way to get out of that hole. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. So let's move on here. Ricky, you begged and pleaded that you wanted this one. So here we go.
Guys, we are at DEF CON 5. Get the guns, get the shampoo bottles that were was it Maybelline? I don't know which one it was, but we are at DEF CON 5 because Transplants Wars 2 is upon us. It could happen at any spark at any time because the Transplants will be releasing a new EP called Take Cover. Actually, by the time this episode comes out, it's already been out. But now
I'm taking cover. That's for sure.
It is due out on October 17th by Epitaph Records. The EP features 6 covers and 1 new song from the band. You can see all the track listing and the album art on the Punk News article. Man your stations. Shit's going down. Adam, what'd you think?
You missed a really obvious Diamonds and Guns reference. Get your guns, get your diamonds.
I was thinking about the shampoo commercial that they did. So, Transplants Wars 2 is upon us.
Oh, it's Fructose Garnier. I was wondering why the hell you were talking about shampoo. Fructose Garnier.
Was it Garnier? Okay, it was a long time ago when that happened. Anyway, this can't be good. I'm going to give it a shot. I want to see what it's like and laugh. And then, you got a Madness cover, a Minor Threat cover. There's a Transplants cover of the Transplants.
Actually, they did list as a Transplants cover, yeah. But it's not actually a Transplants cover. It's a Travis Barker featuring the Transplants cover.
Oh God, I just want to shoot myself. Okay, then they have the new song is called
and Slash. Travis Barker and the Transplants. And Travis Barker featuring the Transplants and Slash, the cover of that.
All right, so you also got a cover by the Flirtations, the Violators, Beastie Boys, and the new song is that they're going to put out is called Won't Be Coming Back. I don't know, Adam, you know, is this, I don't know what to say anymore. You it's up to you, dude.
I dread the Transplants cover of
Baggy Trousers.
Beastie Boys.
Of
Gratitude by the Beastie Boys. Like, no.
What about the Minor Threat cover though?
I think that could be okay because it's just such a straightforward, angry song. I think Baggy Trousers will be interesting because it's such a goofy song and everything about the Transplants, like, we're tough, we're gangsters, we drive around in, you know, old 98s, you know, where we drive around in lowrider, 57 lowriders. But Baggy Trousers, like, I like Madness because most of their shtick is we're really nerdy guys that like playing ska and we're silly and that's what most of our songs are about. And so I'll be interested to see what Transplants will they do a silly song or will they try to make this like tough? I don't know how you can make Baggy Trousers tough.
So the reason why this Well, maybe they're just going to be goofy. Like baggy trousers may be fun because they embrace the inherent goofiness in what the transplants are, right? But like, I mean, like a song like Gratitude, I can't picture anyone that is in the transplants performing the vocals in that song in a way that won't make me want to explode. Right. Cause you think about that. So, I mean, Gratitude is one of the singles off of Check Your Head. It's the vocals are almost like shouted, but they're like kind of reverby but shouted in a very like nasally high Beastie Boys way. I cannot hear Tim or Skinhead Rob or anyone in my head performing Gratitude in a way that's not super weird. Like, I kind of want to hear it now because, but I'm worried it's going to be like, oh, I want to see that car crash.
Exactly. That's what I think this might be.
I don't hate the transplants. I like some of their songs. I still need to check out In a War Zone because I think it's almost a hardcore punk record and has like no rap. Like the transplants are way better when they don't rap. The transplants are way better when they just do hardcore.
Have either of you seen them live?
No, I have not. Have you?
It's a fucking chore, man.
Here's where I'm not going to get off of Gratitude here. Here's where I think that they could have done that well is there was a time early in the I'm not going to say early in their career. There was a back on that first Transplants record, the first one, one of the guests that was on it was I'm trying to remember the dude's name.
Pimp C.
The vocalist from the Nerve Agents.
Oh, wow.
Who's the singer for the Nerve Agents? Shit. Help me, Wikipedia. Nerve Agents.
Okay, if I can just interject real quick, just when I did see them live, what was really cool about seeing them though was just seeing Travis Barker drum is pretty awesome. I'm not gonna lie.
I'm amazed that Travis Barker is your favorite element of the Transplants. He's my least favorite element of the Transplants.
Well, no, I mean, if you see him drum live, it's very impressive.
I'm sorry, Ricky.
I have a lot of respect for Tim Armstrong for what he does in Rancid, obviously. I just realized it's sort of the same issue that Prophets of Rage has. It's this quote unquote super group that just falls apart when they come together. And it's not saying that, and now individually these guys are super, super talented, even though I'm not like a huge Blink-182 fan. I don't know. There's like some sort of weird collapse when these really talented big people get together and try and make music together. It just doesn't work.
Well, I'll tell you what it is. It's the ice cream and pizza paradigm, if you will. I love ice cream. I love pizza, but I don't like them mashed together. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can get that.
The guy I'm thinking of was a guy named Eric Ozzine. He was the vocalist of Redemption 87, and then he went on to be in the Nerve Agents. And after that, I don't remember what his bands were, but doesn't really matter. Anyways, though, like the Nerve Agents were fucking cool. Ozzy's voice was great. He's got that. And he was if you want to take like Davey Havoc's kind of hardcore voice and make that just like a little bit more weird and dangerous, like that was kind of what Eric sounded like. And he's the kind of guy that I want to hear doing crazy high pitched stuff. And he was on that first Transplants record. I forget what song. It was the last one. I feel Eric. Why do all of our reviews not talk about Eric? Come
on. Well, while I'm looking at it, Ricky, why do you think they're putting this out? There's no real money that covers EP, and nobody was really like demanding this. Do you think they were trying to put together an album and it just fell apart, so they just did covers? Or do you think they just loved the Transplants so much they just decided to do it for fun?
No, I think what happened was this is sort of the precursor to a full length that'll be out sometime next year. That has not been announced yet. But I do remember when I saw them, it had been like a long time since they had been together, like probably I think like close to 10 years. And I remember it was either Skinhead Rob or Tim Armstrong said in the to the crowd, and he said, like, In a Warzone had just come out, and they said, yeah, you won't have to wait long this time for another Transplants album to come out. So I think, and also the fact that they wrote a new song makes me think they probably have more in the can. So I would not be surprised if we got one like next year or something like that.
Two things is shouldn't Tim be focusing on Rancid right now? Didn't they just put out a new album? Second is, yeah. Do you think Tim kind of is bored of Rancid and would rather do Transplants? I get the impression that Tim likes Transplants better than Rancid at this point.
I mean, then there's also his solo stuff too. I mean, he's probably just having fun doing all of them. I mean, listen, if you're in the Transplants, you're probably having a fucking blast. Don't get me wrong.
True.
So he can literally do whatever
he wants. I'm not the impression that like Tim hates any of his stuff. He seems, I don't know, Tim these days seems a lot more content than like Tim of the past.
Yeah, I agree with that. And especially when I saw him with Rancid at It's Not Dead, I mean, they were just having fun. They weren't like, they didn't seem super angry. They were just having a good time.
I don't know how you can be angry when you're like a multimillionaire and you kind of can work when you feel like it. And when you work, you know you'll get paid a lot of money. I'm not dissing them, you know. It's tough to be angry in that scenario.
They're accomplished. I'm not blaming them for that at all. But
right.
But you know.
You know who else, John, is a millionaire who doesn't need to work but keeps working and is angry?
Who? Warren Buffett.
Your presidente.
Oh, there. Morrissey.
Yeah. Your president fucking Morrissey. Oh, anyways, the song I'm thinking of is the first song off the first Transplants record, which is called Romper Stomper. The first verse of it is actually done by Skinhead Rob, and then Eric Ozzine from the Nerve Agents comes in at around like a minute, and he does the second one, and he has this like super shouty, angry hardcore voice, and it's great. I don't know. Go listen to the Nerve Agents. That's my Transplants thing for you. Let's jump right into the Tim Armstrong story because it is related
and incredible. Yeah.
So I saw multiple people, including the Hard Times themselves, retweet the Punk News link to this story.
What?
saying why isn't this a Hard Times headline? So the headline to the story was Tim Armstrong plays Journey to the End of East Bay in a tree. Oh, and this is completely accurate to the story. So Tim, he was at an event, which is in San Francisco, I believe.
Berkeley? No. This is New England. I forget where in New England.
Oh, okay. I don't know why. But anyways, somewhere in New England it's called Musacs. Musacs, MUSACK, Musacs 2017 Rock and Roll Carnival. Now, during for his set here, he climbed up in a tree with an amp and a guitar, and he played a version of Rancid's Journey to the End of East Bay from Outcome the Wolves. Billy Bragg is at the start of the video. He actually announces Tim in. And the mission of this whole thing is to the event here, this Muzak thing, is to give kids and teens a chance or a voice through music by providing guitars, drums, and support for music teachers. So it's a good cause kind of thing. But the video of it, which is a fairly well shot and you know, audioed video and all that, is over on Punk News, and you should go check it out. So it is literally Tim Armstrong with his modern day Tim Armstrong beard sitting in a tree playing this Rancid classic. John, to correct you, this shit happened in Los Angeles.
Oh, well, there you go.
I wish I could have seen that. Oh God. I saw this and then watched it. I couldn't believe that this was a real headline. And I don't know. It was a good performance. I was laughing so hard though. I think the way he's just sitting in the tree.
Now, oh, this hilarious. Is amazing. So here you go. I just pulled up the poster, the flyer for this event.
Yeah.
For the seventh annual Rock and Roll Carnival here. And Tim Armstrong is billed as Tim in a tree. Bracket. What? Tim Armstrong and the neighbor's tree. But, bracket.
But the thing is, like, I just don't understand, like, why in a tree? free.
I'll tell you why. And this underscores why Tim Armstrong is pretty cool. Like, Tim Armstrong's down for wacky stuff, man.
I guess so, yeah.
Weird and interesting, he'll do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean.
So there is something to be said for bands that are super protective of their legacy. You know, like the Smiths, if you will, or whoever else. But or maybe a better example, modern example, would be HHJ or Propaganda. There's also something to be said for guys like Tim Armstrong and Rancid. They'll just do wacky shit just to see what happens. And this was amusing and cool.
So just to tie everything together here, the also performing at this carnival was Mr. Wayne Kramer.
Oh no shit.
There you go. That's a five. So anyways, so this Tim and Tree recorded an on thing. Here's my one observation on this is this is a song that on record Lars sings the chorus to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always weird to me to hear someone in a band that is not normally the vocal part of a song do that part of the song. And this is one where like he's playing it and I'm listening and I'm down with this because I've heard that song 6 million times in my life. But then in my head I can just hear Lars coming in the chorus and I'm like, wait a minute, how's this gonna work? And Tim does it, and I'm just like, oh.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the performance is good, but...
I guess.
Listen, I have no complaint.
Lars could have been in another tree, yeah. Just doing the chorus, is what I'm saying.
But I just have, you know, because this got enough comments to where, and this will be out by the time this podcast goes up, but, you know, I have this on, posted for, on Navel Gazing. I just have it as Tim Armstrong played... a song in a tree with tree hyperlinked. And because this is I don't know why this is so funny. I love it though. It's great.
You okay? You having a stroke?
Oh God. I don't know. Maybe it's the beard and the tree. I don't know. This is too much.
Any particular thoughts on this, John? You like the whimsy of him being in it.
I think this is great, and I enjoy the fact that Tim Armstrong has just thrown everything at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Yeah.
And this is fun, and this is what punk is. Too often what people forget about punk rock is an important aspect of punk rock is having fun and just doing wacky stuff. And that's what Tim Armstrong is doing. And I will give Tim Armstrong credit. He is a rich guy. He's made a lot of money, and I think he's made it in an honest and fair way. But he's still kind of doing punk stuff like this. You know what I mean? He's still doing punk stuff. So... Props to Tim Armstrong. I'm not a giant Rancid fan, but I am a fan and I think he's cool and this is cool.
That said, look at that acoustic guitar he's playing. So he's got this like checkerboard, you know, like ska checkered guitar, yeah, with little Hellcat Records logos like inlaid in the neck.
Oh, he has like several guitar, like custom guitars that are like have the Hellcat symbol there. And I think like Gretsch made one for him. And even electric guitars too. The guy is, I think Gretsch sponsors him at this point.
Yeah, I mean the video is pretty high quality, yeah. So you can actually get like a really good look at this piece of equipment. So if you're like a custom guitar nerd,
like
go watch it because it's neat to just kind of like check out Tim's stuff.
I wonder if it says what the model is or the make, whatever it is.
Well, will you find that out, John? There's this other story here that seemed to be kind of contentious in the punk news universe, and I believe it all has to do with the way that you have. I don't know, phrased and built up and headlined this story or the fact that this story exists at all.
Go ahead, Adam.
Do you want me to read this?
Sure.
Or do you want to tell the story of this? What is the best way to break this?
You can
thing?
Read it and I'll react.
So the story is famous punk rock artifact for sale. And the picture that we ran is a hand jack. So, Like the kind of jack you would use to like roll under a pallet and pump it up and move it. John, you and I both did our time working produce in a grocery store. Like we're intimately familiar with these items.
I can whip that baby around like a sedan, man.
So anyway, so the pallet jack that launched a million punk records is for sale. The jack spent over a decade in the Lumberjack Mortem Records warehouse and was responsible for transporting many, many historic punk releases from distributor to vendor truck, including records by, and you list a bunch of people that isn't really relevant to this, but anyways, Jell-O, Operation Ivy, Green Day, Faith No More, Skank and Pecco, Alkaline Trio, Hot Water Music, and many, many more. The jack not only served the necessary function of transporting transporting heavy vinyl hundreds of yards, but it also raised and lowered said pallets slightly. The specific jack transported thousands of copies of the first Green Day record on Lookout, as well as thousands of Lard and Lawrence Arms records. The jack can hold up to 5,000 pounds. Now you're just selling the jack, right? This storied item was transferred from the Mortem Lumberjack to Alternative Tentacles when Mortem Lumberjack fell into insolvency. Alternative Tentacles representatives went to pick their remaining records held by Lumberjack and were then given the jack by the company's disgruntled staff. So this whole story, John, is because on Craigslist, some Alternative Tentacles people are just getting rid of an old fucking jack. So you have, how did you even figure this out, that this was a that this was something that you needed to blow up and make into an event?
I didn't sit there and figure it out. Like all my great ideas, like the mixtapes. Like Summer Soiree, it was there in a spark. I had the completed idea in a moment's time. It was all there. What's funny about this? Well, one of the funny things about this is this ad actually got the jack to sell, because in the Bay Area, this article went viral, if you will, and a guy that has nothing to do with music came across it and bought it because he saw this ad selling the thing. He's not even a music guy; he's just a guy that needed a jack. So we helped sell this historic punk rock artifact.
The actual Craigslist, the original Craigslist one, is similarly full of crazy nonsense.
What I was going to say is this really angered some people, and listen, I know this article is cheeky and I know it's funny, but there was two, I guess, points to this article. The first is just to be funny, and I can't believe how angry and annoyed some people got. And I don't know if they actually are angry and annoyed, or they're just acting like they're angry and annoyed because people like to poo-poo punk news or whatever. It's like, this is funny and fun, and a big part of punk rock is funny and having fun. And so I don't know how this could make anybody angry. I just think this is hilarious. The second thing is you know, and actually Adam, the reason I thought of this is because about 6 hours before I saw this posting, some guy was selling Glenn Danzig's gloves from the cover of Walk Among Us for $10,000. And I thought, there's nothing really special about those. They're not magical. They're just old gloves that you literally would not spend $1 on if you saw them at the flea market. You know what I mean? But people were spending $10,000 on them because they were touched by Glenn Danzig. And of course, right now, you know, records, you know, certain records are getting crazy prices or whatever. So I just thought, how far does the punk rock artifact value stretch, if you will? You know, I guess I understand why records are worth a lot of money, because that plays music. Glenn Danzig gloves, that's worth a lot of money because it was touched by Glenn Danzig. So the question is the pallet jack that moved a lot of famous punk rock records, is that worth money? You know, the idea, to be academic, if you will, it's an exploration of where punk rock fetishism begins and ends, if you will.
I mean, it seems perfectly reasonable to me for you to make a big deal about it in the in the whimsical nonsense realm of your brain, and I'm totally fine with that. People get angry about it because people get angry about everything we fucking do. So I like when you do things like this, because it gives people that are
uptight,
have the propensity to be enraged, you know, gives them an excuse.
Yeah, I thought this was funny. I mean, I definitely didn't see this coming, but this is sort of,
you didn't see a jack ad on Punk Face coming.
Like, I was like, okay. This is also something probably kind of hard timesy as well. But
I hate that. I hate when anytime anything is funny, people are like, oh, this is like hard times. It's not. First of all, it's real. Second of all, yeah, Hard Times doesn't own the concept of funny, you know, and I guess it's a testament to them that people think it is. Like there's nothing Hard Times about this. Hard Times is fictional stories that, and they're not even all punk rock anymore, fictional punk rock stories that aren't true. This is true, and it's funny. There's nothing Hard Times about it.
They attribute, this is funny, and when you mix funny and punk rock, usually, I think nowadays people attribute it to Hard Times. People don't attribute funny to punk news. They either yell at us, or they just want a stream of something.
They used to, but everybody became a hard ass around 2007, 2008.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe listen, punk scene doesn't.
I'm bringing back to whimsy. The punk scene doesn't have it back to whimsy.
The punk scene does not have a good sense of humor. Let's just be honest. Unless it comes from the right authority. And that,
it used to like yeah, in the 70s, punk was hilarious.
Yeah, I know.
And now, like, no, thanks to Ian MacKaye and Penny Rimbaud, nobody can crack a joke ever.
Ian MacKaye killed humor. Is what you're saying?
And Ian MacKaye's like, I don't know why people think I'm not funny. I love jokes. And like, he doesn't tell any jokes, and you tell him a joke, he gets annoyed. You know? If you see Ian MacKaye, don't tell him any jokes. He doesn't like them.
I have no way of verifying that this is true or not. Ricky, play a song, and we'll keep going.
All right, cool. So, let's see. When was it? When did this come out? Okay, so on September 26th, one of my most anticipated records of the year came out. Ezra Kyer's Speaker in the Sky. It is 8 songs of pure amazingness. And yes, that's not a word. But Ryan Young and Anxious and Angry hit it out of the park again with this. This is everything I was hoping for. And if you haven't listened to it, definitely check it out. It is so good. It's one of the most unique records to come out definitely this year, but probably in the last few years. So I'm going to play a song from that. I'm going to play the title track to Speakers in the Sky by Ezra Kyer. That came off Anxious and Angry last month. Here's Speakers in the Sky.
We had a few things here. We're going to get through them quick because, I'm about to pass out from all this
drugs,
all this drugs tea. We're going to start here with Morrissey. Morrissey, John's buddy, is going to release a 7-inch single for his song Spent the Day in Bed, which is already available on digital platforms. The B-side of the 7-inch is going to feature a live cover of the Ramones' Judy is a Punk, which was recorded on his recent North American tour. The singer's coming out, the single is coming out on October 27th. And the that song, of course, is part of his new full length, which is called Low in High School, which comes out on November 17th. Johnny, any comments on your boy here?
Yeah, one quick thing is this is cool. The rounds of him covering Judy as a Punk made the rounds last year, and it was cool. What I thought was very interesting about this is the idea that is that art and commerce are diametrically opposed, but with the 7-inch and with the 12-inch, we actually see the commerce propelling the art to, I would say, more interesting grounds, and here's why. As listeners might know, in the 80s, Bauhaus, Joy Division, and the Smiths all made very interesting 12-inch EPs or 12-inch singles, and they would put the big hit on one side and then some obscure or weirder experimental tracks on maybe side A as well or side B that wouldn't fit on the album. And the point being is it won't fit on the album because that hurts the art, but we can make a product out of it and put it on the 12-inch and thereby making the 12-inch kind of its own unique little piece of work. Bauhaus, the Smiths, and Joy Division and New Order, they mastered that. Their 12-inches are as interesting as their albums, especially because they got the weirder tracks that definitely won't fit on the album. And here we have Morrissey doing that as well. It is interesting to have Morrissey cover the Ramones because he used to hate the Ramones and then he decided he likes the Ramones. And so that's kind of the joke of the B-side is now he likes the Ramones, which he has for a while. This certainly wouldn't fit on the album. And these days, 7-inches are put out strictly as money-making endeavors or money losers. 7-inches, it costs just as much to make a 7-inch as it does a 12-inch. And so what labels do now is they put out a 7-inch at a premium price aimed at hardcore fans. And they figure we'll get a little bump in profit by selling this strictly to hardcore fans. The average music fan isn't going to buy this. I certainly bought this. And so it's interesting. We have commerce driving the sale of this item, but the result is very interesting, unique art, which I just find is an interesting dynamic.
I always knock Morrissey, but I'm not going to do it this time. I'm genuinely curious to hear what the Judy as a Punk cover sounds like. So, and also I like 7-inches. They're fun. I mean, if it has two good singles on it, I mean, why not? They're really fun to collect. I mean, and you know, you don't have to wait, you know, for a full record to go all the way through. If you're a vinyl person like me, they're a nice little collectible. I think they're great. Even now.
7-inches are wonderful, and there's no debate on that. Okay,
true,
moving on.
True, but at, you know how much it costs to make a 7-inch record now?
Is it like a few bucks a unit?
No, it's I looked it up. If you make like 1,000, it's like $7 or $8 a unit.
Really?
Yeah,
because that's about what like Fat sells theirs for.
Right, and because most of those labels, like Fat, probably gets a little bit of a discount because they probably press like 5,000, so they probably cost them about $4 or $5 each.
No, they don't. The limited, now we're getting to minutia, but they do the color and then probably a certain amount of the a lot more of the black color, I guess.
The point being is most labels, of course, I talked to Mike Park about this. Mike Park's Asian Man Records barely breaks even on 7-inches. Wow. They're more of a promotional item. And I got mad when 7-inches shot up from $4 to like $6 or $7. But after looking it up myself, like honestly, $10 for a 7-inch is actually reasonable. And I'm not saying that's a good deal for two songs, but that's about what it costs. You know, so, I mean, if either you want it or you don't, that no one's getting rich off a $10 7-inch. That's the truth.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy.
Hold on here. I'm doing some math.
Are you at a 7-inch pressing thing?
Yeah.
But Adam, you can't be cheap.
John, you are not incorrect.
Right. And did you pick the cheap option? Because most 7-inches now you get, which I enjoy, are very deluxe. You know, thick cardstock, color labels.
It depends on the size of your run, right? So no, this is Canadian that I'm looking at here, so don't take this as meaning anything. I think what it means, I assume this is Canadian pricing. So I'm looking at a Precision Pressing, which is the big new plant that opened not too far from me. So there's something here: 7-inch package deals. So the packages includes cutting, plating, 5 test pressing freight, full color labels and jackets, assembly and shrink wrap. So basically like the completed unit, right? If you want to print if you want to do 100 of them in black, okay, not a color, it's 1,045. So that equals about 10 bucks, right?
Yeah, there you go. Now, yeah.
But the here's the thing. If you're going to do 300 of them, it's $12.85. So you've cut your price in half, right? You're like $4.28 at that point. You're going to do 500 of them, $14.90, which is about, what is that? $2.98 a unit, right? The color is not dramatically more expensive. So if you're going to do, yeah, okay. So if you're going to do 500 of these on black, it works out to be about that, about $14.90. If you're going to do 500 color, let's see, about $3.42 a unit at that point, it's $1,700. So in any case, I think the moral of the story here is that they are potentially expensive, especially if you want a low run of them.
Oh, so the cheaper. Okay, yeah.
And Adam, if you look at 12 inches, 12 inches aren't that much more expensive than 7 inches.
No, so I mean, so if you're running 100 black 12 inches here, $13.90, so about $13.09 a unit. But again, the it's pretty dramatically different. So if you're going to make like 300 12 inches, it's $17.90, which is about $5.96 per unit, right? So again, if you go from 1 to 300 records, it basically cuts your costs in half, it looks like. But in any case, yeah, there's you can do 12s for much different.
But also, I would point out pricing. This doesn't include shipping, and this is like those thin. Jackets, you know, now when you get a 7-inch record, because they are so expensive, it's not like double thick cardboard jacket usually, you know.
Oh yeah, that's the thing too. And I'm going through here, and this is just like that's just their like package pricing. Like I'm looking through here, and there's like, you know, there's all sorts of wacky vinyl color options. You know, you get your standard jackets, you have gatefold jackets, you have glue pocket jackets, fold over 7-inch jackets, all kinds of shit, right? So
it ain't cheap, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. All right, anyways, though, that's stuff costs money. So where are we going? We're jumping to this next story here. So, John, do this one.
Okay. This is cool, quick story. Kicker is the UK Oakland and UK supergroup featuring the world-famous roadie, Pete the Roadie on vocals, Mals of Dystopia on guitar, Dave Ed of Neurosis on bass, and a new drummer. The new drummer is none other than Dave Mello of Operation Ivy. So that Kicker's working on their third album. It's going to be out next year via Tang Crimes. They put out their second album last year, which was called Rendered Obsolete. Excellent album. Their first album is fantastic. This is just a cool addition. It makes the supergroup even more super. And I think Dave Mello is a great drummer, and I think he'll fit great within the band, which is kind of funny, kind of goofy, but they rock. And I was annoyed at people say, like, this isn't a supergroup. I'm like, yeah, honestly, if you're into punk, then it's definitely a supergroup. If you got one guy from Neurosis and one guy from Dystopia and the world's most famous roadie, I call that a supergroup. I hate people's ignorance. We're like, this isn't a supergroup. Punk rock used to be that you would have to claim to know everything about every single band, which was kind of bullshit. But now people are like proud of their ignorance and they don't understand anything about punk rock. So I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. Anyway, this is cool.
You know, I admittedly, I'm late on Kicker. I think their album last year, did it come out last year?
I think it was last year.
Last year, yeah. I thought it was really good. Unfortunately, I've not been able to see them yet, but I mean, just, you know, someone from Op Ivy playing, why not? Yeah, yeah, for sure. I definitely want to check this out, or check them out when they come back here.
All right. So, Ricky, this next story is going to be for you here. The new Lillington's record is streaming. What do you want to tell people about it?
It'll be out tomorrow, which is the 13th. So, yeah, Uproxx premiered all of the Lillington's new album, Stella Sapiente, if that's how you say it. And the record comes out on the October 13th through Fat Records. You can listen to the whole thing on the Punk News article. So
My copy came yesterday. It's really, really good. Like this, I wasn't sure what to expect because I was sort of late on the Lillingtons too, but I gotta tell you, this is, it's dark, it's kind of weird. If you're into the pop punk Ramones core thing, this definitely stands out among them. I was pretty floored when I heard this all the way through for the first time. I've listened to it about three times now. And it's really good. Just a few standout tracks. Insect Nightmares, Zodiac, London Fog. I mean, and I got to say, this is some of the most unique guitar work I've heard on a record in a year or two. I mean, or at least this year. I mean, they really kind of went all out with the big, you know, kind of solos and higher pitched riffs and stuff like that. So if you're into that kind of thing, I think pop punk fans and punk fans in general will definitely like this. I found this to be quite a bit more interesting than the Teenage Bottle Rocket record that came out this year, which I did enjoy too. But this is different and quite good. So I don't know if you guys did you guys take a listen to this?
I've just been through the first few tracks on it, so I probably shouldn't comment on the whole record or anything.
John.
Ricky, I'm glad you are enjoying this record. It makes me happy that you are enjoying this record.
Well, yeah, I mean, give this one a shot. I was pretty impressed. And now this is another band I need to see too. I missed them at Punk Rock Bowling last year. They were doing like kind of one of those side shows. But if they're gonna plug this one on a tour, like I will be there because again, this is great.
Cool. Let's move on. Mm-hmm. Where's my story list here?
Oh,
John. Okay, these next few here are you, I believe, if you want to do them. So, what should you tell people about here? Let's do some promo.
Oh, we did a story of here are some cool new bands to check out in 2017. Every year at Punk News, we list what we think are cool new bands. It's not the definitive list. It's just a band that the editors and writers think are cool. Some of the bands we covered were the Bloody Lips, Tom Trauma's favorite. We covered Clitoride, Drew Getz, Ellen and the Degenerates, Family Pet, Medium Mystic, Natterers, and many others, or a few others. Well, a good amount of others. A couple of interesting things about this is I think every single one of these bands has males and females or only females in it. And that was just that wasn't by design. That was just how it came out, which I thought was very interesting. I think maybe only one band only has guys in it. It's, two bands only have guys out of like 12 or something. That's pretty interesting. So maybe punk rock is more gender diverse than it has been in the past decades. Second thing is, I wonder if I'm being weird or creepy, and I don't mean to be. Most of the new bands that I really like are mostly women in the bands. Is that weird and creepy, Adam, or is that just random chance?
It's. I mean, it shouldn't be about gender. It should be just about merit and how you like them.
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm like, oh, this band's really good, and it's. But it's all girls. So I wonder, subconsciously, am I being weird and creepy?
I think it also could just be that there are more women being encouraged to be in bands than ever before. So you probably have a flooded market of just female fronted or all female bands. Which I mean is
I wouldn't have phrased it maybe as you would, but if I go look at the last like 10 or 15 records or bands that I've really gotten into over the last year, they're almost always either female fronted or featuring, you know, prominent female membership. Okay. And
Adam, I just had a saving grace for all of us, and here's why. I just thought of this just
well,
now.
Well, no, I was going to say, but I'm thinking about that now, but like it never occurs to me at the time.
Yeah, me either.
Like I feel that like
so I'm saying,
and it's weird because I think that like when back in like the late 90s, early 2000s, it was more of a thing to say where like, I remember like, cause it used to be a common thing that was in news stories and press releases where it's like female fronted band, like female fronted was in quotes was like something that was said a lot for a while. And I'm sure said a lot on punk news back then, but like, I wouldn't even think of writing that these days. That seems weird.
If I can just mention just the band that I included, we had friends of the podcast Natterers on the list that I put in there.
I thought of a saving grace, and but the point, I've never said, oh, this band has females and I will like it. But I'm always like, oh, this band is really good, and it's girls or females or women. I'm like, and I look back like, oh man, like all the new bands I like are girls or women. I'm like, but the question is not are we being creepy directly, but are we subconsciously being creepy? And Adam, I found us our saving grace. I found us an escape route out of that problem.
I don't have that problem.
I don't really either.
You have that problem. You just said most of the bands you listen to were all females.
Yeah, but not because I'm being creepy, because they're good.
That's the thing, is maybe we're being subconsciously creepy.
No,
that's what I'm saying.
Or maybe it's just that they're good.
But I'm not saying that they're not good, but I'm saying is, why aren't there any guy bands that I've been really into lately? But here's the answer is punk rock has been traditionally male dominated since at least the mid 80s. Now that there are a lot of females back in punk rock, it's something new and interesting. So that's why those are catching our ears, because it's something new and interesting, not same old, same old.
Can we not say females? It sounds like we're Ferengis.
No, I gotta tell you, I disagree. If you're good, you're good. That's it.
But the question is, why are we, like, hypothetically, there's more. Actually, I don't even know anymore, but usually there's more guys in punk rock than there is girls. Maybe now it's 50-50. But why are all three of us, all our new favorite bands, it's like 80 or 90% female and like 10% guys? It should be 50-50, unless women are naturally better at punk rock. I would say it's gender has nothing to do with how good someone is at punk rock.
Right.
However, that is something new in punk rock, so maybe that's why that's been catching up.
I mean, like you said before, this was, I mean, the fact that this sort of happened was pretty coincidental. It's not like we were
but you're rejecting the premise. The premise is not, do we see a band with females and say, oh, I would like this because it's female. It's, we listen to a bunch of bands and say, oh, I like these bands, and you go back and look and see they are all females. What's the explanation as to why in the past 2 or 3 years, all or most of my favorite new punk rock bands have females in them, and previously that was not the case?
Maybe we got a spike in those bands. I don't know. I mean,
that's it. That's what I'm saying, is there probably are more females in bands now than 5 or 6 years ago.
It's possible.
And because that is it's something new and interesting, and that's why it's catching our ear, because all three was like new and interesting things, not same old, same old.
It's possible, but
I think that I want to say that maybe a big part of this might actually have to do with the fact that rock and roll right now is not at the top of the cultural ladder where it was for a long time. And when it was at the top of the cultural ladder, you get a lot of people picking up what the current sort of biggest thing is, and then trying to churn out as many copies as you can in search of cash, right? So a band like Blink-182 or Green Day becomes big, and then, you know, every fucking bunch of goofs that looks and sounds like Blink-182 or Green Day suddenly has a record deal and is on every tour, right? And I feel like if you back when punk rock was more of a mainstream going concern, you could very likely go see, you know, go see one of these, you know, pop punk bands on tour, and, you know, you'd have four bands, and every band would be four dudes, you know, wearing fucking board shorts, doing a very similar kind of music. But like these days, the scene's a little bit more weird in a good way. Like we're not, you don't have that, like, that huge influx of cash to find, you know, to go pump up bands that look and sound like other bands. So what you're getting is maybe a little bit more of a natural representation of what's going on in those scenes, and not just a weird funhouse mirror reflection of like whatever's popular. That would be an interesting case if that's the truth. I don't really know, but that's what I'm going to go with.
Whatever.
Anything to make John stop saying females.
Well, how should I say it? Girls?
Just say women.
Women? That's fine.
Women.
Whatever. This actually turned out to be a really good list. I like doing these quite a bit, actually.
Is this mythical thing that we were supposed to post, like, 3 years ago. Like,
but no, that's a different thing. But I'm sorry, Adam. I've been putting on awesome shows, putting out awesome cassettes. So if people are upset because they send something for Lightning Reviews and they don't get their Lightning Reviews because they sent out a single email, they're just going to have to wait. I'm sorry. This is only delayed by 6 months, Adam.
Oh, I don't care. Whatever. I mean, I don't post things half the time, so I'm not going to begrudge anyone. So what are we doing here?
Pugs just put on a cassette. It's called Bullshit Collector. It's got 30 brand new bands, many that are on this list right here. Go out and buy it. You can buy it at the Punk News website, Bullshit Collector. It's awesome. Adam White and I are on it. Tricky Ricky's on it. Unlike our other mixtapes that we've done so far, this one is all new bands. It's mixed like a hip-hop mixtape. It's funny, but the music is kicking, and the music is a lot of different flavors. Go check it out, Bullshit Collector. It kicks ass. $6. Not too bad.
Yeah. Where can people buy this, John?
You can go – oh, crap. I think you go to Narma Records.
You're bad at
you
this.
Go to NarmaRecords.com. I'm just double-checking right now, but I think that'll get you there. NARMERRECORDS.com, NarmaRecords.com. Or you can Google it on the Punk News website and you'll find it. Or just Google Punk News Bullshit Collector and it'll come up.
Yeah. So anyways, that's what you should do. Go buy a copy of that tape because it's cool. It is cool. All right. I'm gonna play one song and then we'll come back and wrap it up here. So there is a band called Chastity. It's out of Whitby, Ontario. It is the project of a guy named Brandon Williams. And
I know I work with a Brandon Williams.
It's not this one. Assume. Is it?
I don't think so. I'll have to ask.
Did you move your offices to Whitby?
We did not.
Okay, well then this ain't him. Anyway, I mean it could be. The telecommuting and all that. So anyways, so Chastity's out of Whitby, Ontario. They are releasing and it will have come out by the time anyone hears this. They have a new EP called Chains that just came out on Royal Mountain Records, and it is a pretty killer 5-song set. It goes all over the place stylistically. There are songs on it that are just abrasive, angry noise punk. There's stuff on there that is a little bit more on like the poppy rock and roll end of things, and it all sort of fits together really well in a way that you would expect someone jumping like subgenre lines as dramatically as he does here to not do that, but it does. So anyways, Chastity is, you know, he's played shows recently with Fucked Up. They've done stuff recently with Priests, but anyways, so I'm gonna play a song from this new one here. This song is actually one that people have heard before. There was a limited edition tape that was put out in a couple years ago, actually in November of 2015 on the hand-drawn Dracula label, and this song appeared on there, and it also appears on this new 7-inch that's coming out. The song I'm gonna play is called Manning Hill. It is a bit of a tribute's not the right word, but it is a bit of a commentary on, you know, living in one of these suburban bedroom communities like Whitby. And it's pretty fucking rocking. So here you go. This is Manning Hill by Chastity.
It's the home of my cow.
which means we're done. If anyone wants to email us, podcast@punknews.org is how you do that. John, do you have anything to tell the people?
Go buy Bullshit Collector. It's an awesome tape, and we will be doing at least one more tape in 2018. Oh, and Adam, I don't want to talk about this, but how about my crazy, crazy idea that I sent you? What'd you think of that?
Your crazy, crazy idea. Oh, yeah, that. I don't know how you are going to physically manufacture that. Mm.
I think I'm out of the loop on this one, so I have no idea what you two are talking about.
Oh, well, the private correspondences between me and John are at times sexy and at times kind of weird, and this was a little bit of both.
Indeed.
This has been a Valor Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or, you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@valorundergroundstudios.com.